And welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Thursday. It's the 4th of August, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on 1030 AM KVOI. It is Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station, and our simulcast partners, KJAA AM 1240 in Globe and KAPR AM 940 in Douglas. The Buckmaster Show is always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We have live streaming of the show at buckmastershow.com, along with an archive of previous programs. Plus, thanks to our new agreement with the online Tucson Sentinel News Service, the Buckmaster Show can also be heard anytime at tucsonsentinel.com. Our lineup for today, and I want to remind you, we are here Monday through Friday, 12 to noon. We'll lead things off with Terry Bracey. Terry is the Buckmaster Show contributor on governmental affairs for us in Washington, D.C. Lots to talk about with that debt ceiling agreement, such as it is. At 20 minutes past the hour, we talk with Dr. John Galgiani, the director of the UA-based Valley Fever Center for Excellence. We'll be talking about the impact of those giant Arizona dust storms on the disease. At the bottom of the hour, Dr. Robert Hendricks, the Buckmaster Show contributor on education, talking about a very interesting decision in the state of Missouri where teachers are now not allowed to friend their students on Facebook. Then we'll close out the show with the Buckmaster contributor on the law, attorney Don Luce. He'll have the latest on the controversy over the Arizona medical marijuana law. We encourage you to be part of the conversation. Call us on the Buckmaster Show live line 790-2040 or toll free from anywhere in North America 1-866-725-5467. You can also email your questions at buckmastershow.com or submit them to us using the Buckmaster Show Facebook. And if you have a particular guest that you'd like to hear from, let us know. Well, raising the debt ceiling is usually a formality, but not this summer in Washington, where lawmakers and the president took it right down to the Tuesday deadline, all of that leaving the vast majority of Americans scratching their heads, asking why did this have to be so difficult. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show live line is Terry Bracey. Mr. Bracey is the Buckmaster Show contributor on Washington, D.C. and government affairs. He's a former staffer and close friend of the legendary Arizona Congressman Morris K. Udall. Terry Bracey is the current chair of the Udall Foundation, a federal foundation named after Moe and Stuart Udall, a former assistant secretary of transportation. Terry Bracey is CEO of a Washington, D.C. consulting firm that has represented the city of Tucson for more than three decades. Mr. Bracey is a special lecturer also of the Washington, D.C. program of the highly regarded University of Missouri School of Journalism. Terry Bracey, good to talk with you. How's it going, Terry?
Great, Bill. How are you?
Well, we're doing fine, as you know, as I said in that intro, really cutting it close, taking it right down to the deadline. And you've been around Washington many years. You know how the system works. Did this surprise you at all?
Bill, it did. Last time I was on the show, I predicted that they'd find a deal because they had to, even though they're such a divided Congress. But the way it played out did surprise me a bit, and I was sort of stunned to think that there were actually a significant number of members of Congress, mostly the new members, who really would have contemplated a default by the U.S. government in order to get their way. I've never known Congress to be like that in 40 years.
I mean, it's just really hard to believe that they would take it this close to that deadline and let what many consider to be the greatest economic power on the face of the earth to default, and consequently we would lose our AAA rating. It's just almost, it's hard to believe, Terry.
Well, Bill, it really is, and it's not as though they didn't have some prior history to look at. If you recall, in 2008, when President Bush first recommended this troubled asset relief program, when you know, the sky was falling in. Congress voted it down the first time around, and of course the markets went down like an elevator. So these members of Congress did not have to look very far back in history to see what the effect would be. And I'm fearful, looking at the markets now, that the damage was done in spite of the fact that we did not default. You just see this loss of confidence, and I think the markets probably are reflecting that, but of course I'm not an economist.
Terry,
but it really wasn't a manufactured crisis, Bill.
That's what I was going to ask you. Is the feeling in Washington that this was a manufactured crisis, and if so, who's getting the blame on this?
Well, there's a lot of blame to go around, but maybe we should start with ourselves, the voters. First of all, there's been a lot of neglect of our government institutions. Kids aren't taking civics courses. A lot of people, you know, can't name the basic institutions of government, the ones which tax them and spend and so on. But in the last election, we sent 87 members of the Tea Party to the Republican caucus, and Speaker Boehner has been pulling his hair out trying to manage that. It's not that there isn't sympathy with the point of view on spending, but you know, many of these folks went to Congress with the expressed intent of doing exactly what happened yesterday, or last week, or the last few days, and they view it as heroic. Maybe we don't have that view.
Well, many of these new members do not have any prior experience, Terry, as you know, in governing, and their view of the situation tends to be seen in one dimension. When government really has more than one dimension. It's almost like a three-dimensional chess, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, government spending is a good example. You know, if you cut back government spending on entitlements or any other major program, then the recipients can't spend as much money. There's not as much business. So we don't have as many taxes. Unemployment goes up. And the whole cycle plays itself out again and again. Right now, we seem to be in one of those economic stagnation periods, trying desperately to recover from the economic situation of the last few years. And a lot of economists, including I read an editorial in the Wall Street Journal, really disputed whether this is the time to do all this cutting. And in fact, there was more bark than bite to what really happened, if you look behind the headlines.
Terry, there's a new development going on under, well, I guess it's a new party, really, in America. It's called America Elects. What do you know about this new party, Terry?
Well, I'm learning about it with interest. They seem to have come into play at a time when the independents are growing as a force in our society. And I noticed, for example, here in Arizona, it's now about a third. So the independents are as big as the Democratic or Republican numbers. But this Americans Elect was an idea generated really by some Wall Street guys, some hedge fund guys, who sort of threw their hands up in the air and said, you know what we need? We need some representation by the radical middle. And so I don't know if that's a category or not, Bill.
I have not heard about the radical
idea was. But
middle.
In any event, it's really quite interesting as you look into it. They have apparently figured out how to qualify on the ballots of all 50 states, and that's a very significant thing. Secondly, they figured a way to use the Internet to do this entire process. So what happens is you go to their website, and they'll ask you a series of questions. You answer those questions, really reflecting your preferences on policy, and then they'll suggest that you join a certain group that blogs and gets together over the Internet. And that group and other groups are allowed to suggest a presidential candidate, someone with the constitutional requirements and the stature of past presidents. And in the spring of the year, in April, They have sort of a primary. They have take all those candidates, and the top six then are asked to pick a vice presidential candidate, a member of the opposite party, and then they have their own convention and an election later in the year in the summer, and they select a ticket, and that ticket apparently, Bill, is going to be on the ballots of all 50 states.
So it's actually like an internet convention, and then the ticket is selected by vote. So, you know, you can't, with the power of the internet these days, I guess we could laugh at it very easily, but who knows, Terry Bracy? I mean, this could catch on.
Well, you know, we have a lot of history of new parties, not a lot, but history of new parties rising. I have no idea if this is the year, but you get a sense that the country is very disenchanted with the governing establishment. And I don't know that this is not going to be a very serious movement.
I think you may be right. Terry Bracy, it's always a pleasure to have you on our program. We are delighted you are a part of it. We'll look forward to your commentary every month on the program. Terry, have a great afternoon.
Thanks, Bill.
Okay, coming up on 12:16 on the Buckmaster Show, that was Terry Bracy, the Buckmaster Show contributor on Washington, D.C. and governmental affairs. Now, what about those giant dust clouds that were over Arizona, especially in the Phoenix area? What are the implications for those who are having some breathing problems and belly fever? That's next on the Buckmaster Show.
Since 1959, Assistance League of Tucson has helped thousands of disadvantaged men, women, and children in the Tucson area. Donated items, thrift shop proceeds, volunteer hours, and financial gifts help support our philanthropic programs like Operation School Bell. Your generosity continues to change lives in our community. For more information on how you, too, can make a difference, visit us at AssistanceLeagueTucson.org. Assistance League of Tucson, volunteers working together.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com. The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including five major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit Service. With 30 projects under construction, including Tankerverde Road and the Catalina Highway to Houghton and the bus pullout at Ina and Oracle, please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Spiro Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh, homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Spiro Amore. Casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Spiro Amore in Tucson on North Swan at Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at SpiroAmorePizza.com. And now in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastropub.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tankerverde, at the southwest corner of Tankerverde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tankerverde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tankerverde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Well, 21 on the Buckmaster Show on KVOI, The Voice, AM 1030. It is the home of the Buckmaster Show. It's also the most powerful news talk station in Southern Arizona. Also, we want to acknowledge our simulcast partners, KAPR 930 in Douglas, 1240 KJAA in Globe. We're glad you're along. Together, we've got you covered, Southern Arizona. Well, concern is growing among health officials that those two huge clouds of dust that tumbled over the Phoenix area last month could trigger an increase in the number of Valley Fever cases during the summer. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show is Dr. John Galgiani, the director of the Valley Fever Center for Excellence at the University of Arizona College of Medicine. That center was established back in 1996 by the Arizona Board of Regents to benefit the entire state. Dr. Galgiani, good to see you.
Hey, good morning.
I have never seen anything like it. I've been around Arizona a good deal of my life, and I've never seen any cloud that big. That thing was, well, actually, both of them. I think the first one may have been a bit more ominous, but those were just huge.
Right. I think that July 5th cloud, I heard, was 2 miles high.
Wow.
The second one, I'm not sure, was all that much bigger. It was, I think, on the heels of the first, it was, everyone took notice, but that one seemed to be like the dust storms we all have lived with. I've been here since 1978, and we all have remembered some spectacular dust storms, but I haven't talked to anyone that remembers one like the July 5th. That was truly historic, as far as I can tell.
What does this mean now for possibly an increase in Valley Fever? And because Valley Fever is triggered by a dust and
well,
spores,
right? This is a fungal infection. Valley Fever is caused by a fungus that lives in the dust or in the dirt of certain parts of the world, and we live in one of those parts of the world. Actually, the valley of Valley Fever is the San Joaquin or Central Valley of California. And in fact, back in 1977, there was a huge dust storm in the Central Valley, so big that actually these spores were carried by that wind, a Santa Ana wind, all the way up into the San Francisco Bay Area and Sacramento. But if you look at the impact of that dust storm on Kern County, or the area that's like Maricopa County and the Phoenix area, is endemic for this infection. They had about 120 cases in the following 2 months after that storm. Kern County is a tenth the size of Maricopa, and probably only 25% of the residents were actually susceptible to infection because they'd already had it sometime before, whereas in Maricopa, we think 75% are susceptible to infection. So that would be a 30-fold difference. And so from that arithmetic, I would suggest there'd maybe be 3,600 excess cases due to that storm, but that's an estimate, and time will tell, because just about now is when we'll start seeing whether or not we have new cases associated with that turbulence.
Dr. John Galgiani is director of the Valley Fever Center for Excellence at the University of Arizona. If you have a question about Valley Fever, you can give us a ring on the Buckmaster Show live line, 790-2040. Dr. Galgiani, what would the symptoms be? What would they be? How would they be manifesting themselves now for people that were there in the Phoenix area during those two clouds?
Right. The most common syndrome that this infection causes is basically pneumonia. Patients develop chest pain, cough, shortness of breath, often with fever, and fatigue can be a very prominent symptom along with that. It really can't be distinguished by a doctor from any other cause of pneumonia, and in fact is sometimes treated as if it were a bacterial pneumonia, unless you do specific testing in a laboratory.
And there has been a tremendous misdiagnosis of Valley Fever, especially outside of the state of Arizona.
Well, especially inside the state of Arizona.
Within the state, too, right?
I think both. Yeah. It's a pro- but you can imagine for a doctor in Canada who has a returning snowbird who, you know, this would not be a common disease for that person. But even in our state, I think that it's common practice to not look for Valley Fever for a variety of reasons, and we're trying to change that practice because I think it's very valuable to establish a diagnosis to manage the situation properly.
How are things coming on the drug front as far as medication for helping people who do develop Valley Fever?
Well, as I think you know, Bill, the University of Arizona is the sponsor of a drug that we are very actively trying to get into clinical trials. We've raised now $8 million, $4 million from the university, but also through a little startup company called Valley Fever Solutions, and we've written small business grants. And with that money, we're now actually making more drug to continue the clinical trials and hope to be back in clinical trials next spring. If that drug is as effective as we hope, it might actually be a cure for this disease rather than simply just controlling the symptoms.
What do people do now? What is commonly prescribed for people who have Valley Fever diagnosed with it?
Yeah, well, many people, fortunately, don't actually end up needing to be treated at all. Their immune system controls it. But for those that do need treatment, there are available oral treatments called fluconazole or itraconazole. There are several other drugs as well. All of these drugs are helpful. But they all have the common property of just inhibiting the fungus rather than actually eradicating it.
You are kind of known as Mr. Valley Fever around these parts. What got you so interested in this particular area of medicine and health?
Well, it was more serendipity than anything else. I came in 1978 to a new job at the University of Arizona, and my research before coming here had been with fungi in general. But once I took this job, the obvious fungus to study was this endemic disease so important to the state of Arizona.
Valley Fever, the cases generally have been going up in the state of Arizona or no?
They have, actually, partly for reasons we don't understand, but also because I think the reporting has improved. There was actually an enormous jump, doubling, in fact, of the numbers 2 years ago because one of the state laboratories, that is a private laboratory in the state, changed its reporting practices to better capture the number of cases that occur, so that last year there were almost 12,000 cases reported.
And Valley Fever can really mimic other diseases, can't it?
If you don't do specific laboratory tests, it can look like cancer. In fact, that's a common differential diagnosis if a mass is found in the lung. It can look very much like other kinds of diseases. Unless you do the specific tests, you really can't separate them out.
And is the test very easy?
It's actually the most common tests used are a simple blood test. And that's very simple, and it's available in clinical laboratories very certainly within this part of the country as a routine test.
And I hear people all the time complaining that their animals, their pets, their companion animals can get Valley Fever too.
Oh, that's absolutely true. And in fact, a study done at the center by Lisa Schubitz indicated that it's about three times as frequent to get infected if you're a young dog as it is a human.
And is there treatment for the animals?
The no. management for the dogs is very similar to how we take care of people.
Dr. John Galgiani, thank you very much for being with us from the Valley Fever Center for Excellence at the University of Arizona. He is the director there, and the concern now that that giant dust storm, actually two of them, could in fact triple the Valley Fever cases in Arizona. Dr. Galgiani, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you very much, Bill.
Coming up on 12:30 on the Buckmaster Show, stay with us on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. And the news just keeps getting worse on Wall Street, where the Dow is now down about 410 points amid the continued jitters about the economy. One market strategist says that traders have decided that now is a time to take risk off the table. Forecasters say Tropical Storm Emily is losing strength. The National Hurricane Center says the mountains that divide Haiti and the Dominican Republic are serving to break up the storm. Virginia Tech officials have lifted a campus-wide alert. The university was locked down today after three youngsters attending a summer camp reported seeing a man who may have had a handgun. Subsequent search came up empty-handed. Updating Wall Street, the Dow now down 404 points. The NASDAQ is off 116. More details at srnnews.com.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowland Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including five major roadways, with 30 projects underway, including River Road to Ruthroth along La Cholla and the Star Pass Mission Road intersection. Please use caution in the area and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has also implemented transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And now open in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting. And you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received two 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net.
Well, 35. This is the Buckmaster Show. Well, should teachers be able to befriend their students on Facebook? Perhaps you have an opinion on that. You can call us at 790-2040. Teachers in the state of Missouri are now on notice. No talking to students on Facebook. That decision may have huge implications in the educational community. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show is our contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education. He's the former head of the Department of Educational Policy Studies and Practice. He's taught organizational theory, human resource management, policy analysts at the master's and doctoral level. The former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, Dr. Hendricks, was named Arizona's top school superintendent in 1989. Dr. Hendricks, Bob, good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
It's a really interesting decision that's coming out of Missouri about no talking to students on Facebook. What do you make of this?
Well, it's interesting because I teach human resource management, and one of the modules that in recent years we've added is the whole issue of social media, because it's so pervasive, it's everywhere, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or email or texting or whatever. It's totally surrounding us, and most people are part of it, and including school district employees. And sometimes I have to remind our students that school districts, school systems, particularly public school systems, are very conservative entities, and therefore one has to be really guarded about what one does publicly. And publicly means anything that can be viewed by anyone. And so this recent policy in Missouri about restriction of Facebook is probably a knee-jerk reaction. But I think if you look a little bit deeper, there are some signals about the problems that Facebook and other social media avenues create that really need bear examination and probably some scrutiny.
So this was Senate Bill 54 in the state of Missouri, signed into law by Governor Jay Nixon, and takes effect August the 28th. It's becoming known as the Facebook Law. You wonder now about implications for teachers. Should they even be on social media?
Well, this law, this policy, as I see it, really does go too far. But I think it does remind us, as many policies are implemented to react to something, it does remind us that that teachers need to be very, very cautious. And it really begins, I talk to begin with prospective teachers' employment and being very, very cautious about what you post on your sites. Pictures, dialogue, any narrative that really would question your role, your role modeling as a teacher. And so and for teachers or prospective teachers to believe that employers are not looking at this, they're really looking at it very carefully. And the reality is that many of the accounts, particularly the email accounts that teachers use, are public accounts, and they're subject to the Public Information Act. Emails, Facebook, whatever, and if there is a communication in an employment nexus between a student or teacher to teacher, it is subject to review. And so teachers need to use very, very good judgment and be very cautious about how they use these pages and this communication media.
Dr. Robert Hendricks is with us. He is the Buckmaster Show contributor on education. It is very interesting, this whole implication of social media and how it affects the classroom. And I wanted to ask you, is there any move afoot to perhaps take away these devices when the students come into the classroom? I mean, is that even legal to do? You know, leave all your devices at the door before you go into the classroom.
I think there has been some movement to do that. Clearly, by doing that, we run against the current of some of the situations that have happened in schools post-Columbine, where parents have said, you know, we feel we have a right, we have an entitlement to be able to communicate with our children, particularly in an area where there is an issue of emergency. And so those open channels of communication that are available through these devices, I think, are very prevalent in schools. Teachers certainly have the right to ask that it be put on vibrate or not terrifically interrupt the classroom environment. But to take them away, I think you'd be really fighting against a tide, which a lot of people would view as sort of a safety line.
Do you think students do texts within the classroom?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that would not I would not limit that to the K-12 environment. In an adult setting, in the college environment, many, many times I've had to remind students that their focus needs to be on what we're doing in class and not communicating with each other. Now, once in a while, I will have a student who's also a parent will say, "Is it okay that I keep my my phone on because you know I've got a babysitter and I've got mm-hmm. and that's a different kind of a situation. I think that's a reasonable accommodation, but to simply use that device as a social means of communication during class, as professor, I take great offense at that.
This is the Buckmaster Show coming up now on 1242. Dr. Robert Hendricks is the Buckmaster Show contributor on education. It is a fascinating subject about the new Missouri law concerning Missouri teachers, no talking to students on Facebooks. It was a Senate bill that was signed into law and will become law at the end of August this month in the state of Missouri. Is this something that you see perhaps spreading to other states, something like this, Dr. Hendricks?
You can never say never, but I would be doubtful that this would become a trend.
Why is that?
Well, I think that the Facebook, for those potential issues that might be out there, probably can do as much good or maybe more good than harm. And so to encourage teachers to be able to communicate with students in a way that is positive. For example, I know a relatively young teacher that was hired in a school district who teaches Shakespeare, and he was able to use Facebook in a very innovative way to communicate with students and for them to communicate with him. So there are some great positive instructional practices that can be related to Facebook. So it's one of these things, do you throw the baby out with the bath? And so there are obviously some downsides of using it, but hopefully we can monitor that without imposing a very restrictive policy. So hopefully this, in my opinion, I hope that this will not become a law that will spread.
We've been talking a lot about Facebook, but of course then there's Twitter. What about Twitter? Same category?
Same category. I would put it in the same because you're communicating, and I've been in situations where I've actually been in the courtroom testifying in cases where texting and Twitter has become a serious solicitous matter that is illegal and has created potential harm to children.
And if you're looking for a job, your advice is be very careful about what you put on social media.
I would say that for any employee, but if you're going to work in school environment, be extremely careful about intermixing your social life with your professional life.
Dr. Robert Hendricks has been with us. He's the Buckmaster Show contributor on education. He stops by once a month, and we talk about educational issues. There's always a lot to talk about on that front, and we will be seeing Dr. Hendricks in September. September, traditionally across the country, is Back to School Month. Not necessarily here in August.
Not here for Tucson.
In August in Tucson, it's Back to School Month right now. Dr. Hendricks, have a great afternoon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Bill. Always a pleasure.
Okay, our legal advisor, Don Luce, coming up. We'll be talking about the latest on the controversy over the medical marijuana law in Arizona. Stay with us on the Buckmaster Show.
There are times when you save, and there are times when you
save big.
Whoa. Take vehicle loans, for instance. Any time of the year, Pyramid Federal Credit Union can help you save with lower rates. But now, for a limited time, we're helping you
save big.
That means rates as low as 4.5% APR when you buy or refinance a vehicle loan. Plus terms up to 60 months, whether it's new or used. You won't just save. You'll
save big.
That never gets old. Stop by any Pyramid Federal Credit Union or visit us at pyramidfcu.com to learn more. That's 4.5% APR vehicle loans for a limited time. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options.
That's huge.
Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Learn more at pyramidfcu.com. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
If you're having foot or lower back pain, you're not alone. My foot doctor recommended custom foot orthotics created by Bob Novak. Bob is a certified pet orthist and best in Southern Arizona at creating just the right foot support at a price you can afford. Please give Bob Novak, the owner of Arizona Limb and Brace, a call at 795-2553 or visit Bob at Rosemont and 5th. I did, and my feet thank me every day.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Savino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net.
It's 12:49 on the Buckmaster Show. Joining us now on the Buckmaster Show is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor, Mr. Don Luce of Luce Brown and Associates, with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Don Luce is the author of two very popular books on the law, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Don, good to see you.
Good to see you, Bill. Thanks for having me back.
A lot of legal issues to talk about. We had Tom Horn, Arizona's Attorney General, on the Buckmaster Show on Tuesday, talking about a U.S. judge, or the United States government, the federal attorney's office, asking the judge to toss Arizona's suit over the legality of the medical marijuana law. It just seems like every day there are new developments on this. Where are we right now with this? Give us your overview.
Well, to start at the beginning, Bill, last November, the voters narrowly passed Proposition 203, which was the Medical Marijuana Act. And pursuant to that proposition, the Department of Health Services has certified thousands of patients as medical marijuana users, as the proposition envisioned. However, the Department of Health Services, at the governor's direction, decided not to issue any dispensary licenses. So the 125 targeted dispensaries are basically sitting in limbo while the Attorney General is trying to get a federal judge to declare that the employees who are charged with carrying out this law are not going to be prosecuted by the federal government for violating the possession and distribution provisions of the federal marijuana law. You know, under federal law, it's still a crime to possess marijuana, whether you are a certified patient or not.
Yeah, you could have all the paperwork in the world, I think, from Arizona. The federal law supersedes that.
I guarantee you that a federal agent is not going to care if you're a certified patient under Arizona law.
Let's move on. A lot to talk about, Don Luce. Want to talk about some of the under what is referred to as underwater loans in Arizona. And unfortunately, Arizona is one of these states that's still very high on the list. Just about half of all Arizona mortgages were so-called underwater in the spring of this year. That's the second highest percentage in the nation, according to a new report from a private research firm. That is really still dragging down this economy.
That number is staggering, Bill, and it's staggering because foreclosures are devastating to real estate prices. I thought it might serve us to take a look at some of these figures. The negative equity, on average, is $60,000.
Oh, my goodness.
What that means, of course, is that the value of the home in over or about half of the cases is $60,000 less than the amount owed on the mortgage. And for the homeowner, what this has done in many cases is caused them to think about what has been called a strategic foreclosure. And this is where somebody who is able to pay the mortgage decides on the basis of economics that it's strategically not a good idea to pay it, and they walk away. So you have lending institutions taking back these homes from people who have the ability to pay but have decided because their home is underwater, it doesn't make economic sense to do so, and they leave it and they give it back to the bank, and then the bank is faced with another real estate-owned property.
So ethically, it may not be the best thing in the world for them to walk away, but they feel for their own economic situation, it's best for them, but they're not really breaking any laws, are they?
No, they aren't. And Arizona, unlike some other states, has some very interesting statutes as concerns the bank's ability to collect deficiencies. We have what is generally called an anti-deficiency statute. And under that law, a lot of homeowners can walk and they face no economic consequence whatsoever other than damage to their credit rating. The banks, under our laws, in many cases, cannot go after the borrowers for the deficiency.
The number of Pima County property owners who received foreclosure notices reached a 40-month low last month. That would seem on the surface to be good news, Don Luce.
Well, on the surface, but you have to remember that Arizona is right at the top of the list of states with foreclosures. To put this in perspective, in July, which just ended, of course, there were 666 notices of trustee sales to Pima County homeowners. That's 666 homes that are at risk of going through foreclosure in 1 month. Now, last year, there were more than that, so the news is good if you're looking at the trend, but nonetheless, it's really hard to feel good about that number, that absolute number of 666 homeowners who last month received foreclosure notices. I might add, too, that once a foreclosure notice goes out, that doesn't mean that the home is going to be sold at a trustee sale or a foreclosure auction. What it means simply is that the loan is in default, the bank has decided to give notice of its intent to sell, and then through a process that generally takes 3 to 4 months, the homeowner either works out a loan modification with the bank or a trustee sale occurs, at which case then the foreclosure is complete.
So just a foreclosure notice on the surface is not indicative that that home will, in effect, go into foreclosure.
No. In fact, a lot of homeowners who receive foreclosure notices are successful in either short-selling their property, which means that they get the lender to agree to essentially write off some of the mortgage balance, or work out a loan modification, which would result in either an interest or a principal reduction on their mortgage.
Don Luce is with us. He's the Buckmaster Show legal contributor. He is with us usually the first Thursday of the month, and he is the author of Arizona Laws 101. And Mr. Luce, you're going to be very busy because we have 357 new state laws that recently took effect. So I know you're busily updating your book, Arizona Laws 101. Anything exciting on those 357?
Well, there are some that really are interesting to talk about. One has to do with this photo radar issue that everybody likes to talk about so much.
That's personal for me. I will be in traffic school. I'm announcing it to the world. Saturday morning, I was stopped. I will not stop, but a photo radar took a nice picture of Bill Buckmaster going through an intersection.
Well, one of the changes to the photo radar laws had to do with the notification to the recipient of these notices that come in the mail that they've taken your picture and that you've been cited, caught speeding or running a red light.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if your listeners know this or not, but you do not have to respond to those mailed notices. Now, if you don't, in many cases, they will personally serve you. And
now you tell me. But if you don't, there can be consequences.
Well, the consequence is you may have to pay $25 to have the notice personally served. But in a lot of cases, too, the cities and government entities choose not to personally serve for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is that the person whose photo was taken doesn't live within the jurisdiction, or the vehicle is registered to a company or is a lease vehicle. And so it's not that every snap of the camera is going to result in a citation being mailed. And even with respect to the ones that are mailed, if they're not responded to, then the entity's sole remedy is to send out a process server and try to find the errant driver.
So this is different than being stopped by an officer and served a – are you being served at that point? That's – serves as a citation. That's different than getting it in the mail, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Another one of these 357 laws had to do with some changes in the abortion statute. And as we discussed on the last time I was on your show, some of these provisions are on hold because there are two lawsuits pending that are challenging the constitutionality of the changes that the legislature had just put into effect. And the reason these laws recently took effect is because, generally speaking, most laws that are enacted by the legislature take effect on the 91st day after the legislature adjourns.
That was my next question. Why did this all happen on a Wednesday in the middle of July?
So that's the reason.
Kind of backdating it from when they adjourned.
The legislative session adjourned 3 months prior.
Got 30 seconds left with Don Luce, and I do want to remind folks that he is working on an update to Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for non-lawyers and estate planning in Arizona. I don't know if you're updating estate planning as well.
Right? No, I'm updating Arizona Laws 101.
Yes.
From beginning to end, and I'm just amazed. It always amazes me at the number of changes to the laws that are made every year.
You could update this every 6 months. No, let's not. Not that often. Don Luce, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates Certified Public Accountants, Mike Flowers and the gang over at 2919 East Broadway. Reminder, tomorrow's Friday Focus Newsmaker interview will be with Gary Hayes. He heads up the Regional Transportation Authority, known as the RTA, and the Pima Association of Governments. I am Bill Buckmaster. Thank you for being with us. We are here live Monday through Friday on AM 1030 KVOA. KVOI, The Voice. Have a great afternoon.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR, Douglas. And 1240 KJAA Globe, The Voice Radio Network.